Again, we come before thee to worship you in spirit and truth, to be guided by thy spirit, to meditate upon the content of thy word, to find our relationship and the conditions in our environment through which we pass as a nation, in which we find ourselves as individuals dwelling, recognizing that what you have purposed to accomplish for the righteousness of the establishment of thy kingdom forever shall take place. The powers of darkness that fight against thy kingdom shall be defeated. But we are the instruments in thy hand. We are the household which thou hast called. We recognize it is important that we understand thy purposes and thy word, that we become adjusted unto the declaration of thus saith the Lord. Praying, our Father, that you shall grant unto those that are awakening out of their sleep the spirit of testimony, that they might bind the powers of darkness and loose the mighty light of thy truth across this nation, that once more the great altars of liberty might blaze with the light of truth and the powers of darkness be dispelled. Break from our backs the yokes and the chains of socialism and communism and all the conspiracy of Antichrist that is directed against us. We pray, our Father, for the removal from power of every individual in high offices within this nation that would seek to bind us with the bondage of the darkness or would appoint around us the enemies of our faith and of our national destiny. We pray, our Father, that only by thy Spirit and by the stirring of thy people can we see thy deliverance, and so may it come speedily and may it come quickly. We pray for the deportation and removal from our land of all that would destroy this nation and would not abide by the realization that thou art God and that we are thy people. We pray, our Father, for deliverance which you have promised, and you said, when the people that are called by my name shall cry for deliverance, and I shall deliver them. So we accept this. We pray that we, with the instruments of thy hand, shall be stirred and guided to carry forward that which you have ordained. We pray thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. In thy name we ask it. Amen. Turning tonight to talk about the subject of the peace that fails. When we talk about the failure of the peace, we're not citing that we do not believe in peace or that there is not an instrument that can bring peace. But if ever there was a great and vital danger facing the people of this great nation of God's kingdom, it lies in the course of peace with the enemies of God's kingdom predicated upon their honesty or their ability to keep their word. When we talk to you tonight upon the evidence of the peace that failed, it is with the realization that we as a nation are now attending a peace conference at Geneva. That peace conference can produce no good in the world of which you and I are a part. We know why that peace conference was called. We know why we are participating in it and what the strategy of the enemy was concerning this conference. I think it's important that you understand this. For today, you as a great nation of the Western world are the most powerful single nation of God's kingdom. Your ancient heraldry, your modern symbol, the outstretched wings of the American eagle, which has been prophesied in the book of Revelation, was to be the mighty strength and leadership to the great nations of your faith and your race during this climactic hour. In the 12th chapter of Revelation, it tells you that it is the strength of this great nation of the eagle that is given to your civilization in the hour when the powers of darkness make war, specifically says, make war against all those that have the testimony of Jesus Christ and the commandments of God. There are many people that would like to separate, in the instances of international affairs and political activity, the elements of their faith. They would tell us that we must separate international affairs and we must separate political affairs from our faith. And I'm going to tell you, apart from the power of your faith and the spiritual power of that faith, to stir the peoples of your nation to an awakening and a reconstruction of patriotic spiritual force, without the dynamic like a great spiritual crusade, this nation, my friends, would be doomed to the sleep of death, where you have been brainwashed and given the hypnotic continual dosage that would cause those who are asleep to slumber on. God has other purposes for this nation than this. And we are a part of a great and vast conspiracy. There are a great number of people that do not realize this, and we are told today that if you have the idea that people are plotting against you or that they're against your nation, that you must be a paranoid. Well, that's some of the semantical warfare they're trying to use to keep you from thinking about the circumstances that you're in. You know, one strategy of the powers of Antichrist is to make such a Machiavellian plot on such a large scale that it's too big for anybody to believe. They'll believe little facets of conspiracy, but they cannot consider the vastness of this conspiracy against your nation and all the great nations of Christendom. I want to cite to you that it is a great conspiracy because of its size, because of the number of peoples that are embraced in it, but all the cunning of Luciferian evil and all the race that helps to spread and carry out his activities are directed against you, not only for the conquest and the holding of all the world, but for the turning of their power against the nations of Western Christian civilization. The design is to reduce you to political and economic slavery and eventually destroy every vestige of your national existence, so the super bureaucracy of the Antichrist can rule from one end of the world to the other. We have looked over the history of our nation, all of us as individuals, to know that from the earliest hours of our coming into being with the Declaration of Independence to our time, that we have been able to withstand every problem from the standpoint of warfare or the threats against our survival. Actually, you are in less danger from the battles and the wars that you might be engaged in than you are, my friends, from the peace tables you sit down at afterwards. Some people do not understand this, and they say, why is this thing so? The reason why this is so, my friends, is because you are being guided into an area of entrapment. You are being taught to place confidence in individuals that have no spiritual power to direct their responsible actions in relationship to keeping their word. You may remember at the climax of World War II that notices went out to all the nations of the world. You might be surprised to know the bureaucrats that sent out these notices. The notices went out to the nations of the world inviting them to produce a lasting peace. And as this notice went out to all the nations of the world, we even had one sent to ourselves. America as a nation did not send out these notices, though the invitations were accompanied by notices from your State Department to ask all the nations of the world to send their representatives to San Francisco, where we were going to create an organization, a vast union for parliamentary procedures, a place where all the representatives of nations would gather together to frame lasting peace and to make regulations and laws to govern the content of nations, operation of nations and their destiny that would make wars almost inevitable. So we saw a copy of this invitation. It went out to every small state and every large one. But behind this pattern were a great number of people working very, very hard for this, whose names had filled the records in the past of those who dedicated themselves to the spread of the thing we call communism. Strangely enough, we had a number of liberals that had been very prominent deep inside the New Deal that worked in the foreign service of the United States government. A great number of them who had left-wing communist backgrounds and who had been discovered early in the days of the Un-American Activities Committee and back in the days of the Dies Committee. A great number of the names of those that were sending out invitations all over the world and participating in building up with lectures to church groups and to various groups all over the nation in educational areas among colleges and among students who were being prepared for foreign service activity. The unique thing about this was that conferences and conventions were held in the continent of Europe in 9 different nations to which the representatives of many nations came. Great numbers of speakers were sent out to these nations, and we have lists of some of these speakers. Many of these speakers were agitators that spoke in this nation supporting the policies of socialism and the special programs of the communist world. Among them were authors and writers for PM and the People's Daily World, the Daily Worker, and the Nation, and the Republic, and a great number of magazines which contribute firmly to spreading the doctrines of socialism all over the earth. It was a strange thing that all of these people at the climax of the war were suddenly so interested in peace. All they could do was advocate the policies of peace, talk peace, for peace was the thing upon the mind of everybody at the climax of that war. And so we were told as we went to San Francisco that we were to now enter into an institution which even before any senator from the United States or any representatives from our nation attended, they had been presented with a document that they were preparatory to ratify, which would permit us to become a part of this institution and organization. And before its final formative periods, our senators were told that by joining under this great nation, this great world organization of nations, that we might have to surrender a small area of our sovereignty, but we were going to provide for a program of peace that would affect all nations throughout all the years which were to come. And a great number of senators, in fact, only one senator in the whole United States didn't sign that document, and that was ex-Senator Langer, who's passed away. You know, the Scripture had something to say about this. It says, in the hours when they tell you how they can provide for your survival, how they can keep you from the destroyer, and say a confederacy, a confederacy. And when they say unto this people, the prophet says, a confederacy, a confederacy, join yourselves not to them. Do not respond to this. For if ye join unto this confederacy, it is a confederacy of death and of destruction. Well, they told us it was a confederacy for peace. No wonder that we have these words that so oft repeated in Jeremiah. They said, peace, peace, when there isn't any peace. They sought to heal the hurt of the daughter of my people by saying peace, when there was no peace. Uniquely enough, we could turn inside the prophecies of the book of Ezekiel, and we note here that Maud makes it quite clear concerning this false peace process. He said, it is as though they were building a wall of untempered mortar, and they will say, peace, peace. They have seduced my people, God said, saying peace, when there was no peace. And they built a wall, and lo, others daubed it with untempered mortar. It is essential that you know the symbolism of the Scripture. Any being that is constructed or built without the blessing of God, without the guidance of His Spirit, and a covenant that is not made by men of spiritual, correct will that's coordinated with the mind of God, is referred to as untempered mortar. Thus, no wall without proper spiritual balance, unrelated to truth and honesty and integrity and the purposes of God, can be expected to hold together. So in this wall of the nations, which they were to advocate, especially among the great Christian nations, would this be pushed. Peace. And they will seduce my people with the word peace, and there isn't any peace. For it is a wall of untempered mortar. So God said, when they daub it with untempered mortar, there's going to be a great o'erflowing shower. Only it's going to be the hailstones of fire like a stormy wind. The great bombs will fall. Lo, the wall will fall. And in that day, when it crumbles in battle and war, people are going to say, where's all this daubing you daubed it with? Well, you know, we've had more politicians trying to daub over the United Nations than almost any institution that we've gotten into. You may think that one should not take a stand like this, but I want you to know how serious this circumstance is fast becoming. From the day that we entered into this organization, surrendered some of the sovereignty of that flag, became a part of the United Nations, we were predicating a program in which we would not have the full control of our own destiny again. In fact, as we moved into this institution and were promised peace, and we started to surrender some of the liberties and the rights of our citizens by this institution, we entered into a process in which we have been engaged in cold war and hot war from that day to this. The only thing that we have arrived at through this policy of this world institution that we were seduced in according to the Scriptures is that we haven't had peace since we got into this situation. Not only have we had no peace, but we haven't won one single engagement that we've entered into. Oh, you can say, yes, but right after we got into the United Nations, the Korean War started. The communists invaded from North Korea to South Korea. And as they moved into this area, we had to get in to stop the war, because if we had not done this, they would have seized all of Korea. That's true. The North Koreans came in to South Korea. Do you know why there were communists in North Korea? Because we divided Korea in half in the Yalta-Potsdam agreements. Because socialists and left-wing forces helping to build even the world government, the United Nations, had been drawing up the blueprint and were advising both Roosevelt and Truman. And we conceded to Mr. Stalin on the post-war world. When we divided Korea in half, we gave a vacuum for his communists to come in. So the obvious thing which they tried to bring upon to our attention early in the formation of the United Nations was that, whereas we had in the Big Four inside of the United Nations Security Council, the United States and Great Britain, and we had also nationalist China and Russia, because the United States recognized nationalist China. In fact, at that time, it was still battling with some strength on the mainland. Of course, it eventually had to withdraw in the years that followed World War II to the Isle of Formosa, but we recognized nationalist China as one of the Big Four in the Security Council. 153 signatories, signers by nations, and their diplomats to that document of the United Nations. The exact number which the Scriptures had indicated in prophecy would be signatory to this evil set of documents. Well, the situations have not changed any. From the beginning of the Korean War to the end of the Korean War, we were unable to win that war because we were a part of a group of nations which had to surrender all of its reports and to surrender all of its military strategy and every phase of its operation to a world-scanning board of the organization we had become a part of. Have you ever stopped to think that Soviet Russia, which was supplying Red China with assistance and munitions and material, which was a part of the main strategy for the conquest of the world, was actually seated at every conference that the United States General Staff had? Did you know that from the very beginning, Alger Hiss had made an agreement with the Soviet Union in San Francisco when they were framing up the United Nations that always a Russian general would command the armed forces of the United Nations? Now, you as a great nation of the Western world and a leader among the anti-communist nations are in a world government in which your enemy also participates, which God warns you to never enter into because such an alliance, he said, was cursed from the beginning. Nor could you trust these forces of darkness nor this power of Antichrist. For Jesus had warned John very carefully that these forces of Antichrist would attempt to establish a world government and rule all the earth, control all of its economy till no man could buy nor sell nor trade except with its permission. And now we had joined the format of such an organization because our senators and others thought that this was a road to peace. They had been wooed with the promise of peace, and it was a lie. Well, it was a rather significant thing that in those days that President Truman declared war on the communists of North Korea after the assault, the United Nations automatically entered into the situation, and our generals were under the command of the United Nations. Can you imagine a general like General Douglas MacArthur, whose logistical abilities was unquestioned above all that were around him for the work that needed to be done, capable of doing the job well and doing that job well in command of American Expeditionary Forces, in command of a United Nations Army, though there was less than 5% of the other contributing forces, non-Americans, with the exception of the South Koreans. And then we watched that battle go from the center of the 38th parallel all the way to the Yellow River Line. And when we reached the Yellow River Line, the communist forces had been all defeated by General Douglas MacArthur's forces, and across the other side, great masses of the enemy troops were gathering, and they'd been harassing us and attacking us across the Yellow River night after night. And the United Nations had sent an order, and President Truman had sent an executive order, and that order was that we were not to bomb, strafe, or attack across the Yellow River Line, the Red Hordes. We couldn't attack the supply lines across the Asiatic Railroad. We could not drop one bomb against the factories in which Red Chinese were preparing the materials. We could do nothing to stop that flow of death and war to North Korea, where it would be used against our troops as it related to anything assembled on the other side of the Yellow River. China and Red China were immune. Why? Because the United Nations had decreed it. Why? Because a Russian general was in command of all the forces that were fighting against the communists in the Korean War. No wonder General Douglas MacArthur felt the frustration of the hour. No wonder there was an appeal made that he be released from the control of any institution that could stop him from winning that war by knocking out the enemy where that knockout blow needed to come. But we had a little man in the White House. So small a man that he eventually fired General Douglas MacArthur because he did want it to win that war instead of sacrificing America's sons without winning it. Strange thing. You know why you couldn't win in Korea? You know why you ended right back up at the 38th parallel where you started from? You did it because you were in a confederacy for a peace that was no peace, that God had warned you should never join. I tell you that this nation has no right to call upon its sons to send them to any foreign field of battle under the great generals of our nation without giving those generals and those men the opportunity to win. What type of strange sacrifice is this that a Christian nation could be called upon to make and then be denied the very fruits of victory over the powers of darkness? The strange thing is that every day the reports of the logistical facts concerning the battle, the supply line, the ordnance that was being sent over, a report of every machine gun, of all the cases of ammunition, of all the disbursement of the weapons, and all of the units that would receive them, and where they were. That daily report and map went every day to the headquarters of the United Nations. All Soviet Russia had to do was look down at the map and look down at the disbursement and look down at the directions and just send the Red Chinese the information of where everything was located and how it was located and what was going to be done, because you had joined into a confederacy with your enemy. But that was not the whole strategy. For while you were engaged in this battle in the institution of the false peace, which men were hoping was going to reorganize the world, was being developed, the strategy was also being developed on how to utterly do away with your sovereignty at all, to take away the authority of your rights as citizens and the authority of your state to protect them, to take away the sovereignty of your nation and dispense with your parliament, your legislatures, and everything that related to your way of life. You say this could not be done. Well, from the very beginning, research was started out inside the Organization of the United Nations to take away the sovereignty of nations and to dissolve all the territorial lines which immigration laws or barriers might be using in their operation. So an early convention was set up in the United Nations, and this was the relation of International Refugee Organization. That's what it developed into, to determine where the people should dwell on earth. International Land Organization was to determine how the land of the world was to be divided up. You say, what do you mean divided up? They had America divided first into 6 zones and later into 12. And the plan for the division of all nations and the redispersion of every race and every people on the face of the earth to any spot they want to send them to is a part of the strategy, the master plan of the United Nations, IRA, ILO, and other institutions working out of the same strategy. Who was on these boards? Name communists and socialists and authors who wrote for liberal journals and were trying to operate in the policies of socialism, the redistribution of the wealth of the nations of the world, with a super bureaucracy to direct it at all times. And they were using people to write their propaganda in magazines like McCall's and the Ladies' Home Journal, as well as in organizations that were putting out all the propaganda that was necessary. And from one magazine to another, you would discover the spread of all these articles, even down to the people's level or on up to the diplomatic level. And they were telling us how we had to recognize if we were going to survive in this new nuclear age, we would have to adjust ourselves to interdependence. And with the interdependence, we were going to have to not just say our white Western world, but all the world must think as one. All must be integrated as one. All must come under a central authority that has understanding and knows how to balance out these affairs, that no one in this highly technical world could be able to do any longer independently or for themselves. In fact, the process was continuing to strengthen these institutions inside the United Nations world. We ended with a stalemate in the Korean War. We were right back where we started from. We were not permitted to bomb the enemy across the river. But when the river froze over, he attacked us in great numbers, and hundreds of thousands of men were involved, and God guided us in a retreat. He covered us with air cover, for he cleared the skies, and the strafing factors that were involved in that instance were important. And then he closed the skies in the hour that the Red Forces would have strafed back upon us the attack. And so it was, we watched as the weather balanced two ways, and finally, under that cover, these men were able to evacuate, and General Douglas MacArthur started again at the southern tip of Korea and fought back to the 38th parallel where we started, and then they temporarily called it off. Now, I want to tell you something about that little piece of history. Under Mr. Truman's administration, you spent more money than you've spent for all the wars in the history of the United States for what was not just a skirmish, but was a part of the program of the United Nations to condition us for their authority and their control. We denied our generals victory. We didn't get any peace out of that, but the war shifted from there over into Indochina. And you remember that all through the areas of Indochina, the battle was stepped up, and saboteurs inside Foreign Service and State Department actually sank in the China Sea the weapons and arms which our Congress had delegated to Kai-shek to fight communism with, and he never got those arms because we were fifth column by Reds on the very inside of our nation. The first thing we know, Formosa is the last haven of nationalist China, and they're pounding on the doors of every educational institution and every church body to now recognize Red China, admit her into the United Nations, admit that the status quo is the only thing important, that nationalist China was gone. Admit her to the United Nations, and then she also, like Soviet Russia, will abide by the rules. Well, since you've joined the United Nations, and Soviet Russia has been in the United Nations, if there have been any rules, they favored the Soviet Union, for Russia has never abided by any rules. You say, well, we had a lot of things to work out. Well, you haven't worked out anything at any talk that you sat down with Soviet Russia, because in each one of these instances, you surrendered, you gave in, you acquiesced, you appeased, and you thought a little time, and Russia went away laughing while it stretched its territory to twice its holdings as it was at the climax of World War II. So we watch this peace, a threat today, a acquiescence tomorrow, a just short of capitulation program. And we have continually watched this. From the day that Mr. Khrushchev took over in the Soviet Union, we recognized that as far as strategy cutting and the use of a twofold fork diplomacy, he was even more efficient than those that had preceded him. Some said we has not hurled as much actual threat of war as has Mr. Stalin, but he has threatened us more times and more often, smiling one day and turning on the threat the next day that he would bury us. More than that, no individual man has blasphemed more completely all the things that relate to our race and our faith, nor threatened more completely to wipe out all of the free world than this man has. I turn for one moment over to the book of Daniel, and it tells us in latter times when these transgressors are come to their full, the climax of their program, that there will be this ruler, this fierce-countenanced individual, who understands the philosophies of evil and the dark sentences which he speaks. And it says, in his power, which shall be mighty, and which shall be given unto him by this counsel, for it's not alone his own. And in this he destroys and he prospers, and he destroys many people who are people that do not deserve the kind of treatment he gives them, people who have faith, people who in their nations were spiritual, trusting in God and on your side. Through his policy, he has caused craft to prosper, and he magnifies himself in his heart. I don't know anybody that has strutted around more in the world than Mr. Khrushchev has. But let me point out to you this passage which relates to this man. This is the climactic struggle. It says, therefore, through his policy, he shall cause the crafts to prosper in his own land. He shall magnify himself, but by his peace shall he destroy many. By his peace he shall destroy many. People said, oh, we're worried about the missile attack from the Soviet Union. I'm not as worried about the missile attack from the Soviet Union as the intrigue of Mr. Khrushchev and Mr. Gromyko and the fifth column that we have in Washington, D.C. Listen. Not only by his peace shall he destroy many, but he shall even stand up to the climax against the Prince of Princes, when he shall be broken without hands. So you see, there is a lot of hope in this situation, because he dares to stand up against the Most High God with his blasphemy, even to his own destruction. Now let's turn for a moment to the strategy of destroying with his craft. While we have cited many of these things before, this is imperative that this become clear to your thinking. It is imperative that you realize the mighty danger of this peace of Antichrist. Because in this strategy, he seeks to woo you in this last minute from fear of great international global nuclear war to surrender the last vestige of your independence. We have oft told you that one of the greatest expenses in American life through taxation is the support of the great foreign policy giveaway program to the nations of the world. The supporting of United Nations institutions and the backing of the foreign aid program that it entails is almost 35% of all your tax monies. But it is more than that by the time you can compute the assets which can be manipulated in your nation by these same forces. It's a rather significant thing then that we point out to you the master strategy. The United Nations is always controlled in its voting policies by first the decisions placed in a charge before the Security Council. The first decisions and the first vote is made there, and then after that, if it passes in the Security Council, it passes down to the General Assembly to vote and ratify it anyhow. But if it deadlocks in the Security Council, it's not through, it's passed to the General Assembly to vote on. And when it's voted on in the General Assembly, they then determine if there is a majority in the General Assembly that's for it, they pass it back to the Security Council to see if they can't break the deadlock. But they had a measure which was known as Rule 11. In fact, in 1946, they finally framed up this clause which projected the policies of world government to Rule 11. November 11, 1953 was the day it became effective and has never been used. That policy calls for a deadlock if it occurs in the Security Council, that then they will pass on to the General Assembly calling for Rule 11. A vote in the General Assembly, and all the nations then will have their populations, which are represented by the votes cast, counted up, including the Security Council. And then the decisions will be determined by the greatest number of people represented, and it shall be imperative upon all members of the United Nations to abide by these decisions, and from this appeal there is no recourse. Now, America didn't worry too much about that in 1945 or 6. We had the balance of power in the Western world. In fact, nobody worried about it too much, except when they wanted to let Red China in, and then we said no. But then came those fearful hours when Mr. Eisenhower tried to out Khrushchev, and sponsored all these cannibal tribes coming into the United Nations, and each got one vote. And each vote was one vote, and all America had was one vote, too. So the cannibals of Ghana had just as much authority as the United States in the one vote. But of course, some said, if they ever try to put this Rule 11 through, it won't make much difference because there's only 1.5 or 2 million of these cannibals, and America's actual number of 190 million could outweigh 20 of their votes if you added up all the people. Yes, but they had one situation behind the scene. They wanted to get Red China in. They wanted to get Red China in. Do you know why you won? Do you know why they couldn't use Rule 11? Because when Mr. Kai-shek votes in the Security Council and Nationalist China votes with you, and if there ever was a deadlock and they called for a count, how many people do you think General Chiang Kai-shek's representatives vote for? They vote the whole 683 million of China, because this is the only official China in the United Nations. So you see, you have the vote if they ever call Rule 11 on your side. So there's something they want to do. They must get for the program of the Antichrist to accomplish your complete and utter defeat and the end of your flag and your nation. They must get Red China into the United Nations. Now, the significance of this is that we refuse to recognize it. Now, I wouldn't trust the Kennedy administration or those advisors round about if it were not for the hindering influence of a great majority of people in America that say no. If it were not for the fact that there are congressmen and senators, slightly in majority, that don't want to recognize Red China and all the powers that it involves. For the Liberal Project, which book was published a week ago Thursday, includes the introduction by Jimmy Roosevelt and other writings in it by Bose and a great number of the anti-Christian advisors around Kennedy that make their first project recognition of Red China, seeing Red China in the United Nations, given unto her Formosa and the Pescadores. That's the first program on it. And it almost was accomplished in part last Saturday when Mr. Kennedy admitted to the Congress that he was considering giving grain to North Korea and to Red China and possible recognition of Red China. But the pressure and the letters that came in last week was so great that the administration decided on Friday that it would not do this and forbade the exporting of the grain and said temporarily they were not going to make the recognition. All right. Mr. Gromyko was talking with your State Department. And in this continual stance of the Soviet Union that they wanted to have the world trust one another, they wanted disarmament without inspection. They would not consider any program that required inspection. You say, how why do our leaders demand inspection? Well, in the first place, the people at home don't trust the Soviet Union, and our military don't trust the Soviet Union, and they wouldn't concede to the concepts of disarmament without mutual inspection, even though our military don't want disarmament at any cost, because Russia can hide the weapons with which she would attack you, and it would take 20 years to find them by inspection. Now, they were waiting for the big play. They have been bombarding the press of England and of Western Europe with the threats of nuclear annihilation for the last 6 months. Magazines have been talking about what a terrible catastrophe it would be if this conference does not succeed. However, there was no anticipation upon the part of the majority of our Washington staff that this thing would succeed. But Mr. Gromyko knew what he was there for. And so when finally Mr. Khrushchev was at home rattling the saber, as he was the one-man candidate for the election, he said, our new missile and our new nuclear power can destroy America, the heart of resistance, if they are not willing to move into a disarmament program. Ultimately, this will happen. Then last Friday, Mr. Gromyko turned to your Secretary of State and the others and said, well, suppose you disarm and we disarm. Suppose America and Russia disarms. You have not won. We could both be victims. You in the Western world would not be secure if Russia kept her word. Well, of course, that if was Mr. Gromyko's if. You still wouldn't be secure, because Red China has nuclear weapons. Red China is going to start testing them in June, so the world will know it. Red China is a nuclear power. And therefore, if you were to disarm and we were to disarm, you have no control over the disarming of Red China. She would become the nuclear master. She could conquer the earth. So Mr. Gromyko said, there's only one thing to do. In the advance of this program, we must lay down the foundation of how the world can have peace. You must recognize Red China. You must bring Red China into the United Nations. And then she can be controlled by the decisions for disarmament and the programs for peace. But if you don't bring Red China in, you don't have any way to control her. Well, you've never been able to control Soviet Russia, and she's been in the UN. What makes you think, if you got two devils like that in there, that you control anybody? Immediately, left-wing Washington started to hum. Material started to fly from the left-wing press to women's clubs and to churches and to organizations all over America, even if it's already arriving, that we must immediately press for peace, that we must encourage our leaders to be realists, to recognize Red China. Let's do business. Let's recognize her. She's there. Let's let her come into the United Nations, and let's all disarm. Now, let me show you what would happen. It says, by peace, he would destroy many. If Red China became recognized by the United States, it would mean that we had betrayed not only Formosa, but the resistance of all anti-communists in Asia. If she was admitted to the United Nations, Mr. Kaishek has to get out of the Security Council and Red China take his place. That's the rule. The largest China would be in power. The day that Red China comes into the United Nations, Mr. Kaishek will only vote 4 to 6 million people. They have to decide on how many of those, because they would deny him Formosans unless they were Chinamen. Now, that means that the very first issue that would be brought up before the United Nations, they can call Rule 11, and the whole white Christian world has lost. It means the Red China would say Rule 11, Russia would say Rule 11, Yugoslavia would say Rule 11. And when they got through with Rule 11, you'd be about 750,000 short in every single facet of measure. You say, what do you mean? We mean that if everybody among the neutrals and the right wing voted, they would still be able to defeat you every measure by number. But if the neutrals voted like India with the Soviet Union, then, my friends, you would be short before you got through 600 million without a doubt. Now, it was in India as well as in Burma that in the conferences held there, the Asiatics, led by socialist directors, we're told that we must find a way to break the resistance of the white nations and their selfish attitude towards the raw materials and the wealth of the world. They will not willingly submit to the redivision of their country or their raw materials and production to United Nations distribution boards. So the only thing we can do, they said, is to break down their restrictions against the flowing of peoples to their land. You know what they're talking about? Immigration laws. Did you ever stop to think that the one place where your nation supports discrimination is immigration laws? You know, it's a funny thing. The Supreme Court says that the nation has no right to make any discrimination in any of its areas concerning how it carries out its program. And it steps in to force the end of segregation in areas where the educational program reserved to the states, as it should be, is now being taken from them in order to mongrelize the schools and to start a program of integration. They're moving in on transportation. They're moving in on housing. They're trying to say that they can mix the races and fluff them together and deny you the right to live with your friends, associate with your own kind of a community, or send the children to the kind of school that you want to raise them in. You can provide separate and equal facilities, and it's not enough. All right. But you still have immigration laws. And your immigration program is determined to keep out undesirable immigration that would change the status quo of your country. 145 million out of 190 million are white and Christian. And if you were to permit the status quo to change by an influx of Asiatics, Negroids, and others, you could lose that control over your nation. And so they want to ship in about 60 million people out of India, and they want to ship in another 60 million out of China. They've already talked about 30 million they were going to gather from all of the black areas of the earth, including a lot of dark forces that would come out of the jungles of South America and other places. This is United Nations talking. United Nations, we can show you minutes that came from conferences of UN where they were planning on this redistribution of the land mass to the peoples. But they said it couldn't be done in America because your immigration laws say no. And unless, therefore, the United Nations can gain the authority to abolish immigration laws, to throw open the free movement of people from one nation to the other, directing that movement and the raw materials and the land masses, they cannot accomplish their objectives. So they've almost given up on getting you to abandon immigration, and they have decided to do this by this rule and this vote in the United Nations when they can get Rule 11. They've been working on it, and that's why they want to accomplish this. So the battle of America
has been going on in Geneva. The strategy was not just to enter into a disarmament conference here, but to get you to admit Red China to the United Nations so that you would then be able to negotiate with her on the end of nuclear weapons. But the issue would not be the nuclear weapons. It would be the control of your right to remain an independent and sovereign society.
This, my friends, is just a little part of the evil conspiracy which is designed against you. Within the framework of this peace, it has been the decision of those that were implementing it that the economy and the production of the nations of the United Nations should be redispersed among the have-not areas of the earth to raise the living standards of the world and bring about an equity of the dispersion of the world's goods. This operates under the Economic Council of the United Nations and was one of the advisory areas that we're calling on America to turn our surplus wheat, which we have piled up in this country, over to Red China. Did you ever stop to realize that the best way to keep China home is to not give her enough wheat to march on? You start supplying these countries with all the areas and all the food and material that they need, and you will know the speed with which the Red Armies will march. Significantly, therefore, it says, by peace he would destroy many. We cite unto you that it is not an anti-Christian policy to say we are opposed to this peace with the bear. We borrow that line with some realization that Rudyard Kipling knew what he was talking about when he warned the peoples of the Western world to beware the peace of the bear. There can be no question that the Soviet Union is moving with cunning and with a very intelligent fifth column that's made its way deep into the heart of our nation. I think that you should evaluate also that there's something real funny going on in the United States as to the information being given the people. It was only a short time now ago that J. Edgar Hoover appeared before the House Committee on Appropriations. And he told the House Committee of the great danger that we now face from spreading communist agents more multiple than ever before. And they'd stepped up their espionage and their program. They were training more workers, and they had invaded the areas of labor and of youth, as well as religion and education, in every area of nationality, minority groups, and were spearheading a great coordinated expanded program for the overthrow of the United States. And they had to have more money, and they had to spread out the program, and they had to be able to dig in to stop this thing because it was getting worse. I think that justifies every right-winger in the world. I think that justifies everybody on the right in the United States, whether he's a Christian nationalist or a John Bircher or just an intelligent Republican. So I believe that J. Edgar Hoover was telling the truth, but I don't believe that Robert Kennedy was. Robert Kennedy spoke here, and what did he say in the last few days? He said, well, he wanted people to know that communism was weakening. He says there's really, they don't have very much strength. They're not nearly as strong as they used to be. Communism is weakening. Now, there's no need for anybody to form right-wing organizations. The FBI can take care of that, and you don't have to worry about communism. And communism is weakening anyhow. Just don't let them capture your mind. You're all right. You've got nothing to worry about. Well, maybe he don't think there's anything to worry about, but when I look at the program laid down by the New Frontier, it doesn't look to me like communism is weakening. It looks like their program of socialism is a counterpart of the Russian five-year plan. Now, the young man may be honest, but he may not be able to tell a communist either when he sees one. Remember that Mr. Truman said that this was all a red herring. You couldn't tell a communist from a herring. I think maybe Robert Kennedy is so close to the forest that he can't see the trees. Do not for one moment think that there is not a master plan for the wooing of your race to be seduced by propaganda concerning a rosy world of goodwill in which everybody shares and everybody's happy, everybody has all the things they want and all the things they need. But let's be realists tonight. If you took everything that the have nations produced and added it to what the rest of the world has produced and then divided it up with all the peoples of the world, you'd drop down to a paean existence so far beneath the status and capacities of your nation that it is beyond the wildest dreams of any of your citizens. You know that they are asking for the power to reduce you to a peasant status and take your production and the output of your energies and harness it to this distribution program without giving you the benefits of it. The design, my friends, of the United Nations is now a great super bureaucracy. The supporting policies of Mr. Kennedy and those of his administration lately have stated that they support such an institution, a world government, on such a level that all the problems of the world would be shared. Only we, said Mr. Kennedy, can afford this. I wonder where he thinks the production would come from to support all that the world desires. Where would the money come from? He tells us we have lots of money. And yet you have one of the heaviest debts on you of any people in the world. And you owe it to yourselves, but incidentally to somebody that you're paying interest for the money you're printing. Beware the peace that is no peace. There is a program now to elevate Mr. Bell to head the World Bank in the United Nations. He was a financial advisor to the president. He, as Undersecretary of State, said the other day that we should curtail our generals. They shouldn't talk out about fighting communism and winning, because that embarrasses America and causes the communists to know that we have military aspirations. Therefore, we shouldn't talk about win. We shouldn't talk about opposition. We just want them to be happy, and the only way they can be happy is if we don't talk about overthrowing them. And this is the man who would be handling the economic program of the world, because that World Bank can extend or withdraw credit at the decisions of its directors from any nation or any territory making application anywhere in the world. And incidentally, you have 65% of all the money in the United Nations is invested there and backed up by your property as citizens of the United States. Did you know that 60% of your property was in Hock? There's only one good redeeming factor about that, is that they'd find that it would be a bad place to come to try to redeem it. But they're thinking about that too. There's a bill right now up in the House that they're trying to get out of committee that would force every American citizen to register all his firearms, preparatory to regulations that could be made by the Department of Internal Revenue, laws which they deem necessary without going to the Congress, that could confiscate them all too. They've got this figured out. And I'm going to tell you what God's got figured out here. He said, I'm going to pour out my spirit upon my sons and daughters. I'm going to awaken my people out of my sleep. The watchman's going to start crying from the wall. And these people are going to come up out of their sleep and they're going to stand up. It says that anger is going to appear in their countenance as they discover what's going on. And when they start talking about this and start moving, it's going to start a great fear across the nation. And all your conspiratorial enemies that have backed this play are going to decide they're in the wrong country. I'm going to tell you that I looked at the program the other day, one of those things the New York Times helped stir up. In San Francisco, they already had a big conference. The conference was by all the liberal pinkos, clergymen, university professors, and all the people that thought this must be intellectual, so we'll go. And you know what the program was? How to crush and suppress the right-wing movements in the United States. How to pass laws to curtail their criticism of government and their creation of unrest. And I can name to you Episcopal bishops and others that participated in this, and at their side were some of the very agitators that the Un-American Activities Committee was investigating in the San Francisco area. You remember a short time ago, all these pseudo-intellectuals and all these phony, brainwashed Americans were talking about free speech and the rights of the communists, and they didn't want them suppressed, and they wanted communists the right to teach your children and to speak in your colleges and to move into every area of your earth and put out a propaganda lie for revolution. They wanted communists no longer in jail, even though they conspired against your society and the nation. Everybody must have a right to say anything and do anything that he wants to do. But the right wing. They wanted to let the Rosenbergs out, and they put all the pressure they could to let them out before they were executed. Now they want to lock you up because you have the right to criticize the thing which is evil. But they have missed something. There's already 29% of us awake, and you can't put that many in jail. York Times said 29% of the nation has been awakened by the right-wing revolution. And it is a great danger and a great menace. And this very week, they said, military men with past experience and veterans and military officers are getting together, and they have been forming underground private militias to defend the nation from imaginary enemies. They said liaison contact with all kinds of patriotic organizations has laid down a strong network and supported by fanatical public opinion stirred up by this very, very articulate 29%. And they said the great danger is that who knows when these people might stand up or march in support of the things they believe or the dangers that they fear. Well, I thought that was pretty good fear for the New York Times. I hope they get so frightened they stop publishing. Yes, my friends, the great fear is on. Did you know that virtually every synagogue in the United States has called on all of its people to fight the right wing and demanded that every one of them get out of any organization that they might be in that could be considered right wing? Of course, I don't know where they are in any organizations anyhow, except a very few, and if they're in there, they're in there for no good, and I'd be glad to see them get out of anything so there wouldn't be any confusion. Every now and then there's somebody confused about this. Do not forget that when they burnt down their own Reichstag building, when they bombed their two phony preachers out here in the valley, that it was in a synagogue they were holding the meeting on the basis of supporting world government, the United Nations, to suppress the right wing. And any preacher that's over in a synagogue joining with those that would destroy America and destroy the rights of free Americans is in the wrong company. And nobody else knew he was there but they. And that's the reason why the bombs didn't hurt anything. But nobody believes tonight that the right wing threw the bombs. I want you to know how close you are to a breaking point. The peace, my friends, is the peace that has to fail. It's not predicated on righteousness. Russian nuclear submarines prowled your west coast last week. Your own admirals down at San Diego knew they were there. Your own radar systems detected them. Your own ships at sea sighted them. One of them shot down the flying Tiger aircraft. The Tiger craft carrying 100 military men to the Vietnamese area, 7 of the crew of the plane, never had time for the sounding of Mayday. Never could have reported because the surfacing sub launched a missile that exploded and coming from behind upon the craft blew it apart before it even knew it was under attack. That very day when the flash of the explosion was seen in the sky and suddenly parts fell out of the air as was reported by a Japanese fishing boat, they also had seen Soviet submarines in the area. You are at war with the Antichrist. You are on the edge of Armageddon. And the people talk of peace. There's only one kind of peace. That's the peace that Christ advocates when he says, "My peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you. Not as the world gives peace give I unto you. But let not your heart be troubled." Why? Because it's the peace of knowing that you're on the right side. It's the peace of knowing that God stands with you. It's the peace of realizing all the hordes and all the chicanery and all the evil and all the cunning that they have contemplated to use to destroy and enslave you is going to be set aside by vision, by inspiration, by the sons and daughters of God standing on their feet, challenging the darkness, cleansing again their nation, and determining that we are not going to surrender. Do you know what your Christian responsibility tonight is? Every single man and woman in this auditorium, every Christian in the city of Los Angeles should be deluging its congressmen and its senators demanding that we get out of the United Nations at once. Someone said this isn't the church's business. Oh, yes, it is. It's the church's business when God tells you and your nation not to be unequally yoked together with these pagans and all these forces of darkness. That's what he says. Come out from among them and be segregated and be separate. He said, don't make an alliance with the heathen. Don't make an alliance with the pagans. Don't make an alliance with the Antichrist. Out of it comes destruction, betrayal. And right now you're paying the chastisement of the heaviest tax burden in all history. We might just add, don't ever forget it, that one of the heaviest burdens on you is income tax. Karl Marx designed it. In the 1848 manifesto of the Communist Party, it was Karl Marx who, producing that manifesto, said we can destroy the capitalist nations with income tax. If we can graduate it and can direct the development of such a tax, we will destroy every capitalist society. There isn't any doubt that we are now facing the great and final tests. Decisions which are being made now can only be corrected by the mandate of the people. Tomorrow we're going to have a visitor in the United States. It's Mr. Nehru's daughter, who married one of Gandhi's descendants. Remember that Mrs. Nehru is a Gandhi. Remember that this woman of India comes with her caste mark on her forehead, the mark of the symbol of her pagan idol, to go all over America and tell America why she was right in taking Goa. As we said last Friday, it's time that you hurried up the program and sent somebody over to India to tell them why we took Cuba tomorrow. I was ashamed of Mr. Eisenhower when he went to India and he let the pagan priests of Kali put the mark of Kali on his forehead. Instead, as president of this great Christian nation, of standing up and saying, I appreciate your friendship and I appreciate your gesture, but I'm a Christian and my religion forbids me to carry the mark of an idol god. But he didn't say that. He went around India all day long with the mark of the beast on his forehead. Last week, it happened again. Even though the wife of the president looked better traveling around the world than Mrs. Roosevelt ever did. Could you just imagine Mrs. Roosevelt and Jodhpur's out riding the Bengal Lancers? It wasn't the horse they gave Mrs. Kennedy. They took her to the Temple of Kali. There they dipped into the vermilion blood-made paint and put the mark of Kali on her forehead. I'm going to tell you that every house that takes the mark of Kali must be swept out of office in America before the blessings of God can come on you. Why, all this friendship from all these pagan sources, all the time that they were whining and dining the wife of the President of the United States, they were talking about the essential responsibility of America helping to share for the development of India and China and the rest of the world. So I tell you this concerning the United Nations reconvening. When they reconvene, the committees of the nations for the consideration of Red China, it may be called up a special session for a speedy consideration upon the part first of the representatives in this part of the service of the United Nations in order that they can get back to Geneva. For right now, we're stalemated in Geneva unless we do these things. Recognize East Germany, plan for the neutrality of West Berlin, recognize Red China. But China, Russia said, now we will back up a little and let the German question lie if we can do something about China to get her into this organization now. You see the strategy. So we tell you again, yes, it's the peace that we need in our hearts, that we are strong enough with God to take care of ourselves if we can get out of the trap we're in. There's only one alliance this book favors. Do you know what that is? That's an alliance made with America, by America, with Britain, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, Belgium, Holland, Germany, South Africa, Canada, and every other white nation on the face of the earth. And all white men should stand together with one firm determination that as one solid block, they will defend their right to survive and they will liberate the forces that communism would destroy when it threatens their security. I'm going to tell you this in closing, that this is going to happen. For the kingdoms of this world are going to be ruled over by the great sheep nations of God's kingdom. The peace that failed was the peace of San Francisco and the United Nations as an institution, because this was the peace of the devil, and it cannot win. The kingdoms of this world are going to become the kingdoms of our Lord and His Christ, the children of His kingdom, the nations of Christendom, but not by acquiescence, not by a truce, but by a victory over the forces of evil. And without it, there is no security. We're speaking next Friday night on the blueprint of the week's events as it relates to biblical prophecy. When we announced this subject tonight that we were going to speak on, we did not know that on Friday that Mr. Gromyko was going to let out in the news of the week the events, the strategy. But we knew what the strategy involved, because we had received information that falls on the desks of clergymen, how to soften up their people with peace so that they would be willing to let in Red China, so that the peace and the disarmament conference wouldn't fail. So when we get that material, and it comes right out of the Red Hopper to all the clergy of all the basic denominations, we know right away what's about to happen. And on Friday, Mr. Gromyko threw the question into the circle.